Good morning, fellow students, and welcome back to Legacy Weapon, your guide to the Legacy format. This is episode 2. In episode 1, we told you what Legacy is. This episode, we're going to get to what the staples of the format are. But first, I am your host, Jamie.
And I am Drew.
Drew is your other host. He wouldn't tell you that, though, because he doesn't like to toot his own horn.
I know. Well, you sort of figure that out, I hope.
You could be a guest. You could be a hacker.
I could be an interloper from the dark beyond. Anyway.
So, everybody, we wanted to build on last episode. Now, last episode, I know, was very basic and just general. And the kind of idea is we're going to add building blocks. Every single episode, you know, you can jump in anywhere, but it's going to be building on what we've already had, building your knowledge base, building your idea of the strategy, of the format of the cards.
Right.
That's why this one is episode 2. We are going to talk about the format-defining cards, the staples. Now, what do we mean when we say staples?
So, Drew, go ahead. I'm using a loose definition of staples, but basically these are, and we probably won't get to all of them today, but the staples we're going to talk about are the cards that show up in at least 10%-ish of decks.
Okay.
So we've done a little bit of fudging for reasons of lumping things together in ways that make sense, but basically that's what you're looking at, about 10%. And that just seems to be roughly the cards that you're going to see with enough frequency that you really need to know these, and it includes all the cards that really define the format.
This is a list of the staples so that you'll have those cards, you'll have the knowledge, so that when we talk about them later, because we will, because they're staples, we won't have to tell you what card it is. Once we tell you the text on a card, we're then going to assume that you know the card. Now, most of the audience probably knows these cards already,
at least
because they are the staples.
Right.
Right. But, you know, you who already know it, you'll be fine. The people who don't know it, they need this. So we are happy to give it to everybody.
Right. It's also just, we want to talk about not just what the cards are, but why they're important, which is what we're...
Fundamentals.
Why they're
fundamentals
good
are important.
These cards instead of some of the other ones.
Good fundamentals in basketball and in magic, in love.
Yes. Fundamentals of love.
I feel like that should be a terrible song from the 70s. Moving on. Let's do the mana base first. Because
right.
That's something that every deck almost is going to care about.
Almost.
Almost every deck needs a mana base. What does the mana base look like in Legacy?
So, the majority of Legacy mana bases, you're going to be looking at fetch lands, dual lands, and basic lands. Those are what's there to get you your colors so that you can cast your spells on time. And those are the best tools that we have to do that.
Fetch lands, probably everybody knows that because they're in standard right now.
Yeah, but they're also fetch... in modern, so if you've played anything, you probably know.
You probably. But we will say it so that everybody knows. A fetch land is a non-basic land.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't produce any mana, but it has one ability. Tap it and sacrifice it. Search your library for X or Y and put it into play. Pay one life.
Right, where X or Y is a basic land type.
Right. And so there's 10 of these in every two-color combination. So there's a white-black one that says search for a plains or a swamp, and a green-red one that's forest or mountain.
Right.
So that's good. It's great. In standard right now, you know, they're fetching up your basic forests and mountains. They're fetching up the slow lands.
Right.
We'll talk about them hopefully never, but maybe eventually.
Maybe eventually.
I'm sure. Yeah, eventually. So when we say duels...
We mean the original dual lands here. These are
right. The word duels is thrown around for any land that makes two colors of mana
right.
sometimes, but the original dual lands, capital D, from Alpha, Beta, Unlimited, Revised, the first four sets, they are the best. They are non-basic lands,
right.
and they just are two land types. So Taiga is a forest and a mountain.
It taps for green. Taps for red. And you can find it with any fetch land that looks for forests or that looks for mountains.
Right. This works so well with fetch lands, it means that you can have a very greedy mana base.
Right.
It would be easy for you to do if you really wanted to, four colors.
Right.
People don't for a variety of reasons a lot of the time, but you could
right.
because, okay, I've got one fetch land and it's a red-green one,
right.
and I need white mana. Well, that's fine, because I've got a red-white and a green-white. Which one do I want?
Right.
Every fetch land becomes pick any color you want. And you can go grab that.
Right. And this comes, and since these lands come into play untapped, and they don't deal damage to you or anything like that, there's very minimal drawback to doing this. It doesn't slow you down the way it does in standard to have all these colors, and it doesn't cost you life the way it does in modern, which is one of the things that's so powerful about Legacy, is the ability to have all of these colors crammed into your deck because of the power of the dual lands.
For anybody who knows modern, there's a similar thing going on there, but the quote-unquote duels that they have access to, long story short, cost you life when you play them.
Right.
So you pay one to crack your fetch land, then you pay two more to get the land into play. But basically there, it's every land costs you three life, which, you know, we talked about how a few life here and there probably won't matter in Legacy, but, I mean, if you're paying three and three and three, that really adds
suddenly
up.
Suddenly
especially
burn deck just kills you on, like, the second turn because you've done all this damage to yourself.
Right, but you can be greedy in Legacy without being that worried about it, since you're only paying one life
right.
on the fetch land.
Right.
And another thing that this does, which was very counterintuitive to me, how many fetch lands you need versus how many duels you need.
Right.
Generally, you need a lot more fetches than duels, which means you have more things that search than things for them to search for.
Right.
That sounds crazy to me. Okay, I draw my eighth fetch land.
Can't get anything.
It can't get anything. It's a dead card.
Right.
Legacy, you're probably not going to get eight lands in play in a normal game.
Right.
That's usually not a worry.
And if you do, you don't care, because it's not like you have an eight mana spell to cast, so you can probably cast all your spells by that point anyway. So.
Yeah, the great thing about having more fetch lands than basics, especially if you're in three colors or so, is that every single one of them is whatever you need. If you had one fetch and four of every dual land, well, a lot of the time you're going to draw one of the dual lands,
mm-hmm.
which is fine, but what if you draw the white-black dual land and you need green?
Right.
You'd much rather have drawn the white-black fetch land
right.
so that you can go get your green.
Right.
Also, as we will talk about later, there are times when you want more things in your graveyard,
yep.
and so just having a land in your graveyard is a bonus to you.
Right. Sometimes shuffling your deck is also a good thing, and fetches do that for you as an added bonus.
Sometimes. Foreshadowing.
Right. Woo. The other thing is sometimes you actually prefer basic lands. They seem like they're just strictly worse versions of the dual lands. But there are times when there are a number of cards in Legacy that hate on non-basic lands specifically, and so you want to be able to get a basic land if you think you're going to be playing against some of those hate cards. And the fetch lands will get you basic lands.
Yeah, you got to watch out with those dual lands. A Sea and Highway gives all white creatures planeswalk. if you fetched up a dual land that also is a plains, you're going to be in real trouble. We are not talking about land walk here. That is not the reason. No.
That may have been the original drawback to these lands back in, I don't know, circa, like...
93.
Yeah. But it is not the meaningful drawback
no.
now.
The meaningful drawback is that there are things in Magic that hate on non-basic lands.
Right.
Things that can destroy a non-basic land, or that tap a non-basic land, or something.
Right.
It's this kind of little gauge that Magic has done every now and then to help make sure that the basics are still worth playing in the first place,
right.
Giving you a benefit to that. So a lot of times you'll mix them up with some of the duels, maybe one of each or
right.
two of each,
right.
just so that you have them to search up, and then the rest being basics, so that if everybody kills all your non-basics, well, you've still got the basics, and they are much harder to get rid of.
Right, and by the late game, you know, when you have... You really need the dual lands in the early game to make sure that you've got, if you've got two or three colors of spells in your deck, you have access to all of those colors. By the late game, you have enough lands, you probably can get at least one of each basic land type that you have, and, you know, then you're fine.
Yeah.
You can cast your spells.
But one caveat of the format being so fast, you kind of need to be on color on turn one.
Yes.
If your turn one is play a land, do nothing... pass the turn,
right.
do nothing, next turn,
die.
Untap. That is a very slow start. That is a rough start.
Yeah.
Any deck starting that way on their turn one got a bad draw and
right.
probably is mulliganed down to four already.
Right.
Because that's not what you want to be doing ever.
Right. You can sort of get away with that maybe in some of the slower formats, but in Legacy, you really do want to be playing your spells on
right.
time.
So if you have, say, a one mana black discard spell, you want that on turn one. And so you need to get your black mana.
Right.
So that's what the fetches are for, and the duels.
Okay.
What is one example, though, while we're talking about lands, of something that hates on non-basic lands?
Right. So the moving on. So those are the lands you want for your just to get your colors. After that, we want to talk about a series of lands that are there to. They help you cast spells because they do tap for mana, but they also provide some extra functionality. The first of these is one of the big format-defining cards of Legacy, and it is called Wasteland. It taps for a colorless mana. It also has an ability, which is tap, sacrifice it, destroy target non-basic land.
Now, see, to me, when I first saw this, and to everybody, I think, when it first came out, this doesn't seem all that great. And so to the audience, it might not. I'm using up my land drop to take out your land drop.
Right.
I get rid of this one, and I can't hit your basics. I am limited in what I can select to target it.
Right.
So we're both down a land. I didn't get any advantage. Why would I play this? Why would I play this, Drew? Because it gets played a lot.
It does get played a lot. It's in something like half of all decks. The reason is, well, you don't have to use it to blow up your opponent's land. You can just use it to cast spells if you want.
Right. If they've got a lot of lands and you only have two, well, just keep using it as a land.
Right. But if your opponent doesn't have a lot of lands, you can sometimes just steal a win with this. Sometimes people will keep one or two land hands, and if you can just blow up one of their only couple of lands, you might be able to win the game before they're able to get themselves, you know, back upright again.
The nice thing about this is that it doesn't take up one of your spell slots.
Right.
It takes up one of your land slots.
Right.
So it's not slowing down your deck substantially because it is just land. If you want land, if you want mana, it does that.
Right.
That said, if you were, say, playing a four-color deck, you might not want this. Because if you're...
Well, there is a four-color deck that does run four wastelands.
I know.
Well, I'm
on principle saying it is colorless, so that is a drawback.
It is a drawback.
If you had an opening hand of two of these, you probably, depending on what else you're trying to do, couldn't keep that, because you don't have any colored mana to play your colored spells.
Right.
Most decks couldn't keep that.
Right.
So that's a drawback to playing it, but it is so good.
It is so
because
good.
Everybody is getting duels.
Yeah.
Everybody is getting duels.
Almost every
virtually.
Almost every deck is going to be at least two colors, and so this is a pretty powerful way to deal with those things. And the ones that are one color are running other utility lands that are sometimes worth blowing up, because those are also non-basics.
Yep. The only things that aren't non-basics are the basics, are the five normal
right.
ones.
Yes.
So it is.
And the snow basics.
Don't confuse people.
Nobody actually plays those for any reason.
Some people do, just for style.
Just for style, but right, they're functionally, in terms of, for practical purposes in Legacy, they're basically
identical. Wait, we're not going to do Goblin Ski Patrol tech?
No.
That's a card.
It is a card.
So that's one of the things, and we will come back to Wasteland over and over again as we're doing deck techs. We are giving short shrift to all these cards because we want you to get still kind of a shotgun, throw everything out there approach. We're trying to keep it digestible, but we're just apologizing and letting you know there's a lot more to these. We are not giving you all the information because that would take maybe an episode for each card, maybe?
Sure,
I don't
probably.
Know. Some of these. Wasteland you could talk about for an hour.
At least.
Let's move on to the next one.
The next one is Caracas. This is a legendary land. It taps for white mana. Comes to play untapped.
So it's a plains.
It's a plains. It's not technically a plains because you can't get it with a fetch land. But it plays like a plains.
It is quote-unquote strictly better than a plains because it does what a plains does and then some.
Right.
I say quote-unquote because it can be hit by wasteland. It is a legendary land,
right.
Meaning
so
that if you have two...
Yeah.
You can't have two and play at the same time.
Right.
But it's quote-unquote strictly better than a plains.
And then the reason it's better is its other ability, which is you can tap it to return a legendary creature to its owner's hand. This seems pretty cool, like a nice thing to staple onto plains, but there are also... It's better than it may seem because there are a lot of decks in Legacy that do center around legendary creatures.
Yes, a lot that center on legendary creatures that are maybe hard to remove legendary creatures, and legendary creatures that they can't actually cast from their hand, that they can only get into play by cheating them into play.
Right, and so if you bounce them back, you've basically cost them a card because they have used the cheat method to get it in the first time and they can't reuse it.
Right, so they have to try to combo off again to sneak it into play, get the free mana or whatever else.
Right.
So this is a wonderful card and just shows how the format kind of balances itself. You can have it in there with almost no downside over a plains, at least the first one.
Yeah.
And it just says, hey, this 5% of decks, you lose.
Right.
Well, just because.
Some of those decks run Wastelands, at least in the sideboard, as an out to deal with Caracas.
Yep. Because if your goal is cast a giant creature and attack the following turn, guess who doesn't get a following turn? Right.
Moving on. The next one, the last of these sort of utility lands I want to talk about, is Cavern of Souls. So this also taps for colorless mana. When it comes into play, you name a creature type. And then it has a second ability, which taps to produce a mana of any color, which can only be used to cast a creature spell of that creature type. And then, if you do, that creature spell can't be countered. So this goes in decks that are pretty heavy on tribal synergies, the same type of creature. Because counterspells are really powerful in Legacy, and being able to shut off your opponent's counterspells is super, super important. And again, it's just a land. It doesn't take up a spell slot. And sometimes it actually fixes your mana.
Yeah, now that is the thing to note. Oddly enough, this is mana fixing, where we say, it gets you the color that you really want. But also the opposite of, mana hosing yourself, too. If you want to play a black ally on turn one and a green ally on turn two and a red ally on turn three, this is great.
Right.
If you want to cast a spell, have fun with your colorless mana for that spell.
Right, yeah.
So, kind of funny that it pulls in both directions there.
Right, it's a really cool card for that reason, I think, because it does create that tension. I think it's cool from a design standpoint. It's just a fun way for the really creature-heavy decks to be able to sort of fight past counterspells.
And, we probably won't keep mentioning it, but we just wanted to hammer home non-basic land.
Dies to wasteland.
Etc.
Right. So then the last set of cards I want to talk about in this section are cards that help you produce mana really fast. I don't think Modern has, or Standard, has any lands that produce more than one mana. There are a couple that see play in Legacy, and then there's also a card in here that's not a land, but that does help you. It plays sort of like a land that just speeds you up. That card is Lotus Petal. It's an artifact, costs zero, and you can sacrifice it to produce a mana of any color.
So you use up one card, you get one mana. This sounds like a slightly better version of Simeon Spirit Guide for people who are Modern, or Elvish Spirit Guide if you're really old. Of one card in your hand gets to turn into one mana.
Right, and then it's not reusable. And it kind of is like that, although those cards only produce mana of a particular color. This does any color, notably blue and black, which are the best colors in Legacy, which is probably the main reason.
Green is always the best color in the objective sense.
Right.
It is correct. It has righteousness on its side.
Yes.
But even though it does not get to play the card righteousness.
Jimmy here is probably the biggest green mage you will ever meet.
Hey, I play Abzan.
Right. Yeah.
Centered on green.
Yeah. So what this is very useful in combo decks because it helps you cast extra spells on the first couple of turns because it does not take up a land drop. And if you're planning to end the game on the second turn, you don't care that you don't get to reuse this.
Right. This is a card which they've actually said that the way this was intended to be used would not have been broken at all. They basically said their intent was, use it up, get a 2/2 on turn one.
Right.
Okay. Cast a Grizzly Bears or some random, two-drop creature. Which, if you did that, it'd be fine. You probably wouldn't even want it.
It's bad. It's not playable. Right.
But that's the thing. That's not what you're doing with your mana. Legacy is so mana efficient that the things you can do with just one extra mana are amazing.
Right.
It's the difference. It's why some decks can win on turn two, but have a 0% chance of winning on turn one. Just that one extra mana is all they need to just go off.
Right.
Sometimes.
And some of these decks, they basically only cast spells on one turn. I mean, they maybe cast a couple of cheap spells to set up, but then they only need a lot of mana once. And so it's not very much a drawback that this is out there.
And also, as we said, there are things that care about having things in your graveyard. Yep. This will sit in your graveyard. There are things that care about how many spells you have cast in a turn.
Right, and this cast is something a spell, which
lands. It is not. Yeah, those spirit guides I mentioned, you exile them from your hand. That's sad mana. Right. They don't get cast.
It's an ability rather than a spell, right?
Yeah. So those can be bonuses. They can be downsides. If somebody really wanted to stop you, I guess they could try to counterspell your.
Well, they do get into situations where there's a card that functionally counters every spell that costs zero.
Yeah.
So that can lock you out of playing your Lotus Petals. You can still play your lands. Spells that create tax effects where you have to pay extra mana for your spells, those make Lotus Petals really bad.
Yeah, so you have to pay one mana to get a thing that will eventually crack for one mana.
One mana, yeah, it really slows you down.
Okay, well, and that, the reason it's called Lotus Petal, most of you probably can figure out, it is an allusion back to Black Lotus.
Right.
The art and the flavor text.
Right.
The flavor text, if I can remember it off the top of my head, is Hannah from the Weatherlight crew
right.
stroking the petal and saying, amazing that something so beautiful could cause such greed.
Yes, right.
That was Magic R&D making fun of us for being so grabby about the Black Lotus, about
right.
how it was so expensive. I think at the time it cost $300, so expensive in quotation marks
right.
now.
But, try to buy one for that now.
Well, and that leads us, let's talk about Black Lotus.
Sure.
Let's just jump in right here and do our
That is the
band
card
of
the day for today, is Black Lotus. And right, so the point of this is just to say, guess what? Lotus Petal gets played in somewhat over 10% of decks. Black Lotus is the same thing times three. It's exponentially better than a card that's already a staple in Legacy.
Yeah, that is a staple in Legacy. There's another card called Dark Ritual, which costs a mana, and you have to be black, and that one gets played a lot in Legacy.
Right. Yep.
And yeah, it's again, it sounds good, but meh.
Right.
You know,
but once
you
start doing
card,
once we start doing deck techs on these combo decks, you'll see how ridiculous it would be to have three extra mana on the first turn.
Right. Anybody who sees this, I think, can see that it would be good.
Right.
But still, you know, if you're thinking from limited or standard, you're thinking, oh, I can cast my Siege Rhino on turn one. Okay, that's pretty good already.
Right.
But that would be like the weakest thing you would possibly be doing in Legacy.
Black Lotus doesn't get you a Siege Rhino because you need two Black Lotuses and a land.
Oh, okay. Well, it has to be the same color.
It has to be the same color.
Well, fine. It's getting you a...
It's so bad you can't even use it to cast a Siege Rhino. Oh, why is this card on the end list?
Terrible. It gets you a Hill Giant. It gets you a 3-3 on turn one.
Right.
Hill Giant on turn one.
Right.
Great.
But,
who wants that?
Right. Well, in Legacy, it wins you the game on turn one, which is pretty solid.
Yes.
So
part of the reason also, I think, why it is banned, it would go in literally every deck.
And that is the thing. This is probably the reason it's the most expensive card and it's maybe the most famous card in Magic, is that it's maybe the only card that would go in literally every deck. There's pretty much not a deck that would not want to play four of these if it could.
Yeah, I can't think of one. And the actual reason why they started off, when they made Legacy as a format, they knew these cards were expensive, some of the top-end cards, and they wanted you to be able to play with your old cards, but not lose if you didn't have a $10,000 card. So the number one reason why it was banned was actually just costs. They don't really do that anymore, because they picked the top ones and locked those away, and everything else is just so far behind those top
right.
ones as far as cost goes. But if they hadn't have done it for that, they would have had to do it for a lot
yeah,
of other reasons.
Yeah, right. The game would not really function now. Anyway,
yeah.
Wrapping up mana sources, we have a couple of lands that tap for two colorless mana. Those are City of Traitors and Ancient Tomb. They have a drawback, pretty substantial drawback, in addition to just tapping for colorless. City of Traitors, you sacrifice it when another land comes into play under your control.
So how that could play out, turn one, you play an island because you want to
right.
cast a spell. Turn two, you play this. Now you have three mana on
Sometimes
turn two.
Sometimes that can win you the game.
Sometimes that wins you the game. The next turn, you tap this before playing your other land. So you still get the double mana twice
right.
at a bare minimum. One the turn you play it, and then one the turn it
right.
would be sacrificed. Now again, that sounds kind of bad. I remember
yeah,
the first time I saw this.
Bad. Yeah.
Oh, it was terrible. I remember when I saw this like back in Exodus, and I would never have played
yeah.
it. It would have been terrible, because you lose your mana source. It's not recurring. Legacy
right. And again,
fast.
This is going into combo decks. I mean, if you're trying to play a quote-unquote fair plan where you're playing a lot of spells throughout the game, this is not what you want to be doing. But combo decks are trying to go fair.
In those, it's probably about as bad
right.
as you think it is.
Yeah. But when you're trying to just go off very quickly, you don't really care that you don't get to tap this land for mana again, because you're hoping to have won the game already.
There won't be an again, is kind of the idea. Or if there is, there's only one
right.
more next turn.
So Ancient Tomb is sort of similar. It's two mana with a drawback. This is a more straightforward drawback. It just deals you two damage when you tap it.
When you tap it for mana. I remember reading about them designing this. They were saying how they thought it sounded
yeah.
really fair, like just basic, most people wouldn't want it, some people would, and that's kind of true, except when some people, but not everybody, wants it in Legacy, that means it's broken. That's already broken.
And that's true. Again, this is if you're tapping this turn after turn to produce mana, it's going to run you out of the game pretty fast, especially if your opponent has any creatures that they can attack you with. But the point is, you're only tapping this once or twice, and then the game is over.
Right, because you're not so worried about getting to 8 mana with your lands. You're worried about getting to 3 or to 4 or something like that on turn 1 or 2.
That's really only to get that much mana one time, and then they can hopefully win the game.
Now, this is actually interesting you mentioned it. These work really well with Lotus Petal, because what that means is you can play either of these on turn 1 as your land drop, play a Lotus Petal, and you now have 3 mana on turn 1. Right, so you can cast a spell, and we will get into a deck text. Hint, Show and Tell costs 1 blue and 2 colorless, and wins games. So that's kind of how you get fast mana the easy way. There are other decks that do fast mana, but they don't really use staple cards. They use specific cards to make a lot of mana. And we'll get into those when we do deck text, since they're not kind of format-defining cards as much. They're not as ever-present. Is that it for lands in this introductory? Let's move on. Let's do counter spells. We've talked about that a bit already, so let's actually talk about cards.
Right. So there are 5 big counter spells that see a lot of play in Legacy. The first one is, again, one of these major format-defining cards, and that is Force of Will. And this is the free counter spell that I think we've alluded to at some point earlier. It's not free, but it does cost 0 mana.
Yeah, it costs 5 mana, but rarely are you paying that. I've seen it done. I've had it done against me where a game, just goes really long and people cast it. But usually, almost always, 95% of the time at least, people are using the alternate casting cost of... exiling another blue card from your hand in addition to this, and paying 1 life. So this card, you cast it, it goes through your graveyard like normal, and you exile another blue card from your hand to pay the mana cost instead of the mana cost. And it counters as well. This means that you can tap out every turn without being afraid of the one big spell that will kill you. You don't have to hold mana up for an important counter spell, because this can be that one to stop the game-winning play, even if you're tapped out. It can also happen on turn 1 or turn 0 before you've drawn your first card.
Before you play the land, which is super important in Legacy. There are some decks that, on rare occasion, can kill you on turn 1, and this keeps those decks honest.
Rare occasions, like maybe 30%?
Yeah. I mean,
it's really good. There are decks that can win on turn 1, but maybe 30% of the time. So that would be unquestionably the deck to play.
If you could.
If there wasn't this. Honestly, I think that Force of Will is an amazing card, and I think it's the reason that Legacy gets to exist. If there was no Force of Will, if there was no 0 mana turn 1 counterspell, those I'm going to win on turn 1 decks are kind of the only thing you'd be able to win with. Because if you're not playing that, you're losing to it. There's no way to stop a turn 1 win. There are ways, but not enough ways, or good enough ways, or reliable enough ways without this. This keeps those combo decks in check, so that there is room for the fair decks,
and
who ordinarily would lose
the combo. So the other side of the coin for Force of Will is that this is not always the best card in your deck, even though countering a spell for 0 mana is fantastic. You do have to 2-for-1 yourself. You lose 2 cards to counter their 1 spell. Against a combo deck, this is fine, since you were going to lose the game otherwise.
Right, you're countering the only spell that they care about.
And they probably often had to spend several spells to get to the point where that spell was going to win the game. So you're often actually coming out ahead. Against fair decks, though, you're losing card advantage.
Yeah, like imagine you're just playing against, say, a Merfolk tribal deck. Well, what are you going to counter? Their 2-mana creature? Like, I guess you could, but now you've turned their 2-mana creature into a 2-mana target opponent discards 2 cards and loses a life, that's not that great for you. You might do it, but that's not a fit. That's not as strong as the other things you could be doing in Legacy. So in some matchups, it's borderline unplayable.
Right, so this actually gets sideboarded out a lot more often than you might
think. That said, it is... I don't know that it ever would show up in the sideboard. It would be main deck, because you're going to play.
Sometimes you see a deck that runs like three in the main and one on the side, but most decks that are running any of these are running four.
You do have to note, though, you can't splash for this. Like, this can't be your, like, only blue card, because you have to exile not just another card, but another blue card.
Right.
So you have to be at least, what, half blue, because you really want to reliably, if you have this in your opening hand, have another blue card also in your opening hand. It could be another Force of Will. It doesn't matter what the other one is.
But
something you can throw away.
Right.
Moving on.
Moving on. The next counterspell is Spell Pierce.
It's a pretty hard.
This is a one-mana counterspell, one blue. It counters target non-creature spell, unless its controller pays two colors.
Now, see, when I hear that, when I first saw that, I thought of two cards. One is Mana Leak, which is two mana, counters any spell unless the opponent pays three mana.
Right.
And the other one I was thinking of is Negate. Two mana, counter a non-creature spell.
Right.
This seems kind of worse than both of them, because it's limited in what you can cast it on, and it's not a hard counter. If they have enough mana, they can just pay the mana, and then your counter spell did nothing at all.
Well,
it costs
one mana, and those others would cost two mana, and so that's important, because leaving up two mana important. Is frequently very difficult in Legacy. I mean, that means you're not going to be able to, if you're trying to leave up two mana, you can't do anything else until at least turn three. This is something you can leave up on turn one and then still play an instant, or on turn two you can play a one mana spell and then still have this available. And the spells that you want to counter in Legacy are usually instants and sorceries.
Right, kind of like we just said about how you could Force of Will a two-drop creature if you really wanted to.
Right.
That's not great. What you really want to do is gain control of everything your opponent has, or put target 15-15 creature into play, or whatever huge thing that is just going to make this be the last turn.
Right, and those spells tend to be instants and sorceries. So
and
Pierce catches
with them. The speed of the format, with mana being so important, that's why one mana is so much better than two mana. Making them pay two mana, they usually can't.
Right.
Because they know that they have to go fast, they know you're going to be going fast. They usually, it's hard to play around something like Spell Pierce, because you want to be playing your spells as quick as you can.
It does get bad as you go into the late game, but Legacy being as fast a format as it is means that you don't see so much late game play that this becomes a problem most
right.
of the time.
It's and if you're running a lot
of the early game, but it outweighs that.
And one thing I will say is, even then, sometimes the spell you counter, like again, speaking of mine, which is an atypical deck, it's a green elves deck. Sometimes it can pay the extra two mana because it makes a lot of mana. That's what the deck does, is make a lot of mana. But the thing is, it usually then needs a lot of mana to go.
Right.
So you can counter it, and I might have three mana available. But then if I pay the extra mana to you, I don't have enough to do the rest of what I needed
combo,
to do.
Yeah.
The combo half, I now just can't afford. So it's either get my first spell through, but it doesn't do anything, or
let it get countered.
You got to counter it for one mana.
Right.
So better than it looks. Legacy is a lot of things that are better than they look.
Yes. So the next counterspell is Counterspell.
Yay!
This is a two-mana counterspell. It costs two blue, and it counters target spell. This is the original, dates back to Alpha. Very straightforward.
For the record, the best art is the original art with the dopey wizard whose spell is just going bleep. Like, really, really limp little spell.
Jamie also really likes old things.
Old art. I'm very old.
Yeah.
Old art in particular, I am... I'm a huge fan of.
I'm partial to the Mercadian Masks one, because I have foil one.
Most people prefer that one, and it is good. It is not as good as Dopey Wizard. Herpaderp Wizard.
Anyway, this is a two-mana spell, like we said. It's sometimes hard to hold up, but this does see play. So Force of Will Spell Pierce tend to be three or four of in most decks. Counterspell sees play as more as a one, sometimes two of, and usually only in slower decks. But it is so
good. You never really want to have two of the spell counterspell in your hand, because two mana is a lot to hold up, and four mana you're never going to hold up. It's just something which is good and strong and does whatever it needs to do, but it's just so unwieldy. The setup cost, it sounds weird to say that two mana is a high setup cost, but it's a really high setup cost for Legacy.
Right. Some control decks, though, are aiming not to really play as many spells in the first couple of turns, and so it's not as much of a liability for them as it would be for other decks.
Right.
They can afford to hold up two mana on the second turn, and then in that case it's pretty good. And then it gets even better as the game goes on. The next counterspell we want to talk about is Daze.
Daze. Another great card.
Another one of those cards that Jamie and I both definitely underrated.
Looked terrible back in the day.
So this card is from Nemesis. It's just maybe about the only Nemesis card that sees any legacy. There are a couple other ones that are seen.
It is a common card from Nemesis, and it is the most expensive card from the entire set. So that can just tell you something about Nemesis.
Yeah.
And Daze.
I bought a lot of Nemesis.
So Daze says to, if I can do it from memory, counter target spell unless its controller pays one.
Yeah.
So, okay, kind of like the mana leak, kind of like the spell pierce, hits anything. But only one, so it's easy, in quotes.
It's very minimal
to,
max, yeah.
Yeah, very easy to pay for if you have a little extra mana.
Right.
We said how you often don't have any extra mana.
Right.
So, the casting cost is how many, Drew?
Two.
Two. All right, so this seems terrible. I could have a counterspell, the card counterspell,
right.
to have a hard counter.
At the very least, a mana leak. Right.
Yeah. Why would I want this card instead?
Well, because you can play it for free.
Yay, free counterspells!
Yes,
it has an alternate casting cost,
free.
same, in quotes, as a Force of Will.
Yeah.
This one has the alternate casting cost of returning an island from play to your hand.
Right.
Which, that sounds bad. You're giving yourself behind a turn. But that's great if you are stopping your opponent from doing whatever they want to do and lets you tap out.
Right.
Turn one, you play a blue spell. Turn two, they go off. Well, you're tapped out and you only have one island in play. That's enough.
Right.
Just counter whatever the last thing they were trying to do is, and completely just edge them out, where they don't have the one mana. Or, as I said, sometimes even if they have the one mana, paying that one mana completely negates everything they were trying to do.
Plus, the other thing is that a lot of Legacy decks don't run a whole ton of lands, since you only need one or two mana to cast a lot of your spells. So by the third turn or so, this really is free, because you didn't have a land drop to play next turn anyway.
Right.
So it costs you a land drop you weren't going to use.
Yeah.
And you can freak people out, because even if you don't have this, you can kind of bluff that you have it sometimes and make them not tap out to play spells in the early going, because they're afraid of getting countered, and they'll wait until they have one more mana. And
yeah, I have
buying
definitely...
Buying time is so important.
I have definitely, maybe not skipped playing a card, but played my second best card, figuring that they probably were just going to Daze it.
Right.
And a lot of the time I'm right.
Right.
So which, even if I'm right, well, they took out my second best card, and now I got to wait another turn to do anything, so that's
right.
not great for me. If I'm wrong, well, then they've just bluffed me into not playing the card I wanted to.
Right.
Wonderful just to have it exist.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, as much as I love green and hate blue, I like Daze. It feels fair, in quotation marks. We talked about how there are no fair decks. This seems reasonable to
right.
me.
One mana seems like something you can deal with. Yeah.
Yeah. Except when you can't.
All right.
So are there any counterspells that we want to talk about right now?
One more card that's kind of a counterspell that I want to talk about. This is actually not a blue card. This is a red card.
Yay! Blue's not the best color.
It is.
Right?
The best color.
Right? Well, you said red. Red must be the best color.
This card is good only because blue is so good.
Oh, no.
So this is Pyroblast.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a close cousin to this, Red Elemental Blast, that does functionally the same thing, but for the purposes of this discussion, we're just going to lump them in together.
We will note, if you have the option of the two, Pyroblast is technically better because of a very, very narrow, almost never comes up rules reason, because they were worded slightly differently.
Right.
Don't worry about why, at least not now. Just know that if you're building a deck and you've got both, use the Pyroblast first. So, okay.
Yeah, if you don't, though, it probably won't matter.
It probably won't matter. So Pyroblast.
Pyroblast counters a blue spell or destroys a blue permanent. And it costs
one
red mana, and it's an instant.
Which is such a good rate if you know your opponent's going to be playing any blue whatsoever.
Right.
We were talking about how one mana counter spells are going to be four ofs,
right.
even when they don't hit creatures, even when they give you an ability
hard
to pay extra mana.
Counters, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and those are great. This one is a hard counter. Do it. Done.
It counters anything as long as it's blue. And if you happen to draw it after they played the spell, if it results in a creature or an enchantment, you can still blow it up after the fact, because it kills permanents, too.
Yes. There are blue enchantments. There are blue creatures. There are big blue creatures that get reanimated sometimes.
Right, sometimes,
It's great.
Right. So this is... obviously very situational. If your opponent is playing Jamie's deck and it's all green and black, this is entirely a dead card.
Right.
But since, like we said, Force of Willis is playing about 3/4 of all decks, well, that should tell you that there's a lot of blue in about 3/4 of all decks.
Yeah, you are over the course of the tournament, going to see some blue, probably going to see mostly blue.
Right.
Now, this is, in the decks that can run it, a great sideboard card.
Right.
It is notable that from time to time, as some certain decks become too powerful, this will become a main board card.
Right.
Because if you know that 50% of the metagame is going to be specific, hard-to-stop blue deck X,
right.
Well, you need this. And
right.
Against the non-blue decks, well, it's one dead card, but you can still try to win just with a basically a mulligan attacked on.
Right.
But you need it for these funds. That usually says, hey, something's going to get banned soon.
Something's about to get banned. And right, so this was seeing some main deck play right before Dig Through Time got banned. It will probably creep back out of main boards. Dig Through Time was so powerful, and it was just really hard to deal with.
Yeah.
So,
notably, about a year ago, it had creeped into main boards as well, right before they banned Treasure Cruise.
Right, yeah. So that's sort of a pattern.
Yeah. So, well, that's great. And now we know that red is only good because blue is good.
Red has some other good cards, but this might be the best red card in Legacy.
Blue is for bad people, Drew. Don't be stop being a bad person. Blue is for bad people.
Yeah.
And people who want to win Legacy. Moving on.
Moving on.
Actually, before we move on, I want to thank our sponsor.
Right.
We talked last episode, and if you have found us, you know where we're at, where we are hosted on GatheringMagic.com, and we are sponsored by CoolStuffInc.com, which is a great website for buying cards. I currently have a deck that I'm going to be building up for Legacy that I'm getting straight off of them in one giant lump. They also have fun sales of the day, which can be anything from a specific card to commander packs or something. So
they're
a great website. So the other sponsor we have, and that's just for this episode, is there's a little bit of a PSA. We are sponsored by a super PAC with the election coming up. Veraska, Citizens for Veraska the Unseen. Sifu. They didn't give me a pronunciation guide with it. But, are you tired of the established politicians with their rules and their guidelines and their stupid blue spiky anime hair? Vote for Veraska. Veraska has stayed out of politics and out of big corporate money by being, well, unseen. You kind of can't see her because then you die. So you know how justice is blind? Justice is the person she hangs out with the most. By justice, we mean that everybody eventually dies. So it's fair for everybody, and she will make sure that you get what's fair for you. For Ask of the Unseen, make Ravnica great again. See, we're politically minded here, too. We try to... you said ooh at the end. Did I get a little bit too... Did I get too politically deep on that one?
Moving on. The last category of cards we want to talk about today is cantrips. These are another major part of Legacy, what makes Legacy so good. When we say a cantrip, what we mean is a card that draws a card, basically.
Okay.
You spend a mana, usually, draw one card, usually.
Yeah, you can use you might hear the phrase about anything that draws another card, and
right. That
can make some sense. You pay a 5-mana spell, you get 5-mana worth of spell, and then they just tack this on as kind of an extra bonus.
Right.
Really, though, we're talking about 1 or 0-mana spells that you can do quick, cheap, easy, and drawing a card is one of their main factors.
Right. So why do you want to do this? I mean, you're spending a mana to take one card out of your hand and replace it with a different card. The reason is that this gets you through your deck faster. There's a concept called velocity, which is just basically how fast you can get through your deck and see more cards. And this increases your consistency. Especially for combo decks, this is very important to help you find all of the pieces that you need to combo off. And
right. It
allows you to do things like run fewer lands in your deck and more spells, because maybe the third land, or certainly the fourth land in your deck is probably not very helpful, but you really need that second one, though.
Right. So say that you have an opening hand that's one land, and it's got some of these cantrips. Some of the good ones, which we'll get into in a second, let you look at the top few cards of your library. Well, that's fine, because even if you don't draw a land on your first turn, there's probably a land in your top three or four cards.
Right, and so you can probably keep those cards as opposed to mulliganing them, which you would have to do in the absence of these. Otherwise, or you'd have to run more lands.
Yeah, so what's the first one?
So the first one, this is the most played card in Legacy. This is Brainstorm.
Brainstorm. Hate that card, it's blue.
It's blue. One blue
of course
mana.
It's blue.
It's, of course it's blue. One blue mana, instant speed, draw three cards. Then
good
put
start.
Two cards. It's a really great start. Then put two cards back on top of your library from your hand.
Less
have
good
to be the
finish.
Ones you draw. Yeah.
That's kind of a bad aftertaste, I gotta say.
Really terrible.
Now, I remember back when I was playing in Ice Age, this was not a very good card.
Which was
because,
the original printing of Brainstorm.
Right. Yeah. The thing is, you draw the cards, you put some back, you put back the bad cards you don't want, but then that's what you're going to draw next turn.
And
you
the turn
actually,
after that.
Yeah, and the turn after that. So you used one card to get one card, so you didn't get ahead on number of cards in your hand, and you didn't really get ahead on what cards you were going to be drawing, because you're still going to draw those bad cards. You've just
right.
ruined your next two turns.
Right.
Two things. One, as we've said, Legacy doesn't always care what happens two turns later.
Right.
And two, what if you put your worst cards on top of your library and then got to shuffle your library?
That'd be pretty good.
If only there were a colorless zero mana way to shuffle your library.
And what if it? And if only it were something that you already wanted to have a bunch of in your deck anyway.
Ooh, I know. Soldier of Fortune. No, that's not it. Fetchlands. Fetchlands is what we're talking about.
Fetchlands is what we're talking about. Brainstorm and Fetchlands are our best friends.
Yes. You cast Brainstorm, say on turn two. You say you have one land. Okay. Look at the top three. Grab a Fetchland. Put some stuff you really just don't want. Extra cards that are expensive, or say you have too many lands, extra lands, put them back here in your library, crack your fetch land, shuffle them away.
Yep.
So now you've drawn three good cards,
right.
gotten rid of two bad ones, and you get to keep going without having stacked the top of your deck with bad cards.
Right.
It's amazing. Also note, instant speed. They don't do instant speed card draw for cheap anymore. Because terrible things like this happen. Though,
right.
there's a really interesting way that these work together with Force of Will.
Mm-hmm.
Brainstorm is part of the reason why Force of Will is so good. Because if you have a Force of Will in the top three cards of your library, you can grab it at instant speed in response and then cast the Force of Will.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. Or if somebody's going to make you... this is getting maybe a little bit too deep right now, but if somebody's going to try to make you discard your Force of Will... You can instant speed Brainstorm. Put your Force of Will on top of your deck.
Right.
Have them make you discard. No Force of Will to hit here. Then draw your Force of Will back with the next turn or your next Brainstorm.
Right.
It's wonderful. It can hide your Force of Wills. It can dig and get you them. It makes it better. So
yeah.
Interesting interaction.
Plus it's a blue
because
card to pitch to Force of Will.
It is. Look
right.
at that.
Yeah.
But that works because it's instant speed. I wanted to note that because the other ones we're going to talk about are not instant speed.
The others are all sorceries. So the next best one, and so Brainstorm's in, again, about three quarters of all decks. The next one is Ponder. This is in slightly fewer, but it's still in a strong majority of decks, over 60%. It's a sorcery. You look at the top three cards of your library, then put them back in any order. Then you can, if you want, at this point, shuffle. Don't have to shuffle. Then you draw a card.
Okay, so if you like the cards on top, good. You like the cards on top. That's all you
right.
need. You don't.
You
don't need
anything
else.
Get the best one of those three. Yeah.
If you don't like the cards on top, shuffle and then draw another card. So you can, in theory, get rid of the top three cards, almost like, well, it's not like Scry 3, and we'll get into that. But you can think of it the same way that if they're bad cards, chuck them.
Chuck them. Right. So this also plays well with Brainstorm, because if you play a Brainstorm and then a Ponder, you can get rid of bad cards, and then this will give you a shuffle, even if you don't have a fetch land.
Nice.
Right. But frequently what you want to do is play Ponder on turn one, and then Brainstorm on turn two, so you can Brainstorm, then play a fetch land, and then shuffle. But right. Anyway, a lot of decks are running four Brainstorms and four Ponders, just to get through their deck as fast as possible, see as many cards as possible, get a lot of velocity... And a lot of selection.
Right, because this effectively digs you four cards deep in your library. If there's, say, one card that you really need, you get to look at the top three. If it's one of those, perfect. If it's not, shuffle away, and you get to look at another card, the one you now draw. So you're basically looking at, effectively, the top four cards of your library to try to really dig to whatever one important thing you need.
Right. Great.
So what's the next one?
The next one is Gitaxian Probe. This is another one-mana blue sorcery. You get to look at your opponent's hand, and then you draw a card.
There must be more, because that sounds like peak, and nobody plays peak.
Right. So, actually, there are a couple of decks that sometimes...
No one plays peak.
Anyway, the upside of Gitaxian Probe is that the blue mana is actually Phyrexian mana, which means that you
Ooh,
can...
Ooh, spicy.
Spicy. It means you can pay for it with two life instead of a blue mana. So this is a zero mana spell, if you want it to be.
Right. So basically, you can say two life, draw a card for one card. So you don't get card advantage out of it, but you can see your opponent's hand. It's useful
right.
if you're trying to combo out.
Right.
You get another card in your graveyard.
And it gives you velocity to look through your deck.
Right. It basically, having four of these in your deck means you're playing with a 56-card deck. You're going to get to the cards you want more often.
Right.
Note, there are reasons why you wouldn't want this. Notably, it makes it harder to mulligan.
Mm-hmm.
If you have this in your opening hand, you don't know what you're going to draw off it. You don't know whether or not to mulligan your hand or not.
Right.
Say you have all four of these in your opening hand. All right, so unlikely.
That's
but say
crazy,
you,
but
yeah. Say you do. Well, are you going to draw four lands or four spells off of that?
Right.
Because if your other cards in your hand are all lands or all spells, it could be a great hand or an unplayable hand, and you just don't know.
Right.
Makes it very hard to know what to do. I've thought about putting it in my mono green deck just because you don't need blue to cast it, and
I
just can never bring myself to do it. It's the wrong decision. Because mulliganing is too hard for that
right.
deck to manage this. It's rough.
It also, looking at your opponent's hand is also not to be underrated, especially for combo decks. You want to know whether your opponent has a Force of Will
yes.
or one of these other counter spells.
And we're getting long in the episode, so we're not going to get to it this time. But foreshadowing, there's cards where you want to guess what's in their hand.
Right.
You want to know the best way to guess what's in their hand?
Know
Look
what's
at their
in
hand.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
One last cantrip is Preordain. This one sees substantially less play than the other ones, but still at least 10% of decks, basically because there are some combo decks just want as much velocity as they can possibly get, and they are only allowed to play four Brainstorms and four Ponders and four Gitaxian Probes, and sometimes they want still more cantrips than that. And so Preordain is the next best one that we're still allowed to play with.
Mm-hmm.
This is a one blue mana sorcery. You scry two, and then draw a card.
Right. So everybody should know what scry is, but we'll say it just in case. Well, no, that's evergreen. Everybody
like
knows that now. All right,
yeah.
So first strike damage happens before regular damage.
Flying creatures can't be blocked. Yeah.
We are not going to reminder text
everything.
A legacy podcast.
Right. It would be your friend.
we'll be here all night if we just try to say what phasing is.
Oh, boy. Yeah, actually, because we'll have to say it like 20 times before we get it right.
Google that if you hate yourself, kids.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Anyway, so this is another way to look at a lot of cards. You get to look at the top two, then you can get rid of them if they're not what you want. So this helps you smooth out your draws, but also it's another way to look at the top three cards of your library, basically, if you're looking for a specific card.
Right. Now, I remember people debating between this and between Ponder and Preordain. Because they were both in Standard at the same time. So that was an interesting time to be playing Magic. And people were debating. And generally, the problem was, if you're comparing that to this, is how much is it combo versus how much is it grindy value. If you are digging for a specific card, which you often are in Legacy, whether it's you need a Force of Will, you need your combo piece, something, you want to dig deeper. It really doesn't matter what else as long as just the deeper you can go. So getting four cards deep is great.
Right.
If you're not interested in much as getting a specific card and you just want to up the card quality, the total number, like you've got lots of lands, you just want to keep yourself from getting too many lands, well, Brainstorm's the best at that, so you might not need it in Legacy since you have Brainstorm. But if you're doing that, the Scry 2 is great because you get to look at two. Maybe you like one of them and not the other. Well, if you played the other sorcery, you'd have to leave them both or pitch them both. But you only get to look three deep, and you don't get to know what that third one is until you see it.
Right.
It doesn't go as far. So it's usually not as good to do the scry. It's usually better to look at the top three.
Right. Almost every deck would prefer Ponder over Preordain, and almost every deck plays Ponder over Preordain.
Right. But just to let you know when you might want to draw one over the other in the course of the game. Because that's one thing. And every time we say that one thing is better than another, it is situational.
Right.
There's very rarely a time when one is always, always going to be the best.
Right.
So just note that. Every game plays that differently. Okay. Do we? Are there any other cards we want to talk about today, or call it a wrap?
I think that is plenty of cards and plenty of talking about cards.
Okay.
I think this
is going to need to be a series, which we'll probably try to get to through sooner rather than later. Because, like we said, it's important to know what Legacy looks like, and it's important to have kind of this foundation of cards, just so we can talk more easily later with you.
Yeah.
So. Okay. Well. How can they reach you, Drew, if they want to shoot you an email telling you you're wrong about all these cards?
I'm at mtgdrewwalton@gmail.com.
And if you want to tell me that that blue is the best color, you can message me at jamie7keller on Twitter or on Gmail. Also hit up the show itself with questions. We are going to eventually have a mailbag, maybe as a whole episode. We'll see how much mail we get.
Depends on how much mail we get.
Send your mail questions to... LegacyWeaponPodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Glad we snagged that address. That was clutch.
Yes. That's a good one.
Until next time, remember, preparation is the best legacy weapon. Thanks. Okay, good. And, you know, by the next time we record, I'm going to try to have a real microphone.
Sounds good. Okay.
And because we'll find out.
Because you did record me, right? And that's the plan, is to use your audio. We're just mine as a backup, right?
What?
What?
You're recording